Why don't you, pardon me, why don't you like hold up like that?
Like just pour it in my mouth.
Like John Hamm's penis.
Get it out of your system.
Get it out of it now. I'm not talking about penises this week.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Movie Chef Podcast, where we make a meal out of movies. I'm your host, Tebs. Here's my executive host, Cormac. Say hello, Cormac.
Hello, Cormac.
I've decided we need to be a lot more efficient. I need to be perkier as well. We've had feedback.
What?
We've had feedback. Well, right. Yeah, Movie Chef Podcast, make a meal out of movies.
This is your call for feedback. This is your call for feedback a couple of weeks ago.
It was asking for your feedback.
Oh, fuck.
So I gave out my email address, cheftebs@outlook.com, and I asked people to do your appraisal. And this is going to decide whether you stay on as executive host or I put you back down to host.
Jesus. This is an awful lot of fucking pressure on me. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah, and you don't know any of this. So,
I don't.
Right. Daniel in Stevenage has actually done top trumps comparing both of us.
Oh, no.
Drunkenness. Cormac, 8.
I've been sober since February.
Yeah, but you were really drunk last summer.
Yeah, I was really awful, drunk. Awful drunk, yeah.
Tebs, 5, so you beat me on that. Opinionated. Cormac, 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Tebs, 7. That's okay. Yeah, that's it. That I'm a bit of a
but that's the thing. You're the anchor. I'm the wild card. You know,
I said all along, you're the talent. I have to keep the talent up. film knowledge.
I would say me a 4,
2,
you an 8,
6, only because I like Joker. So Daniel to Stevenage, go fuck yourself. You give you a 2. Probably because you didn't
watch it. I've seen Masters of the Universe 4 times this year, Daniel from Stevenage. Fuck you.
Dick addiction.
11.
Cormac, 10. Tebs, 10. Banter. You give us 10 for that as well. So you beat me on that. Right, well, cheers, Daniel. Thanks for that. So, Cormac, your appraisal so far, you're doing better than me because you're an opinionated drunk. Who likes
I'm dick. A loudmouth. I'm a loudmouth who talks about penises a lot. Thanks, Daniel.
Emily in New York State.
Oh, wow. New York.
I think she's been quite specific that to say she's not in the city of New York, but New York State.
She fucking hates New York.
Hey, guys. Cormac is obviously brilliant at what he does. Tebs, you should stop picking on him.
Thank you.
He obviously knows more about movies and life in general and shouldn't have to put up with your bullying each week. Yes, he may have a tendency to digress into stories about the size of an actor's penis or a strange hatred of all things British, but he is the star of the show and you should treat him as such. Perhaps we should focus on you, Tebs. You often sound half asleep and disinterested in what you're talking about. You must sound more like a stoner at the beach than a podcaster. Keep up the good work, Com.
To be fair, if you have to talk to me for an hour and a half, it is like being browbeaten. Because like sometimes, you know, interrupting you and shouting over the top of you, screaming about penises. Yeah, I understand. I understand how sometimes you can come across like that.
And lastly, I asked for people to give an appraisal of you and your work on the podcast. Fabio from Napoli. Best podcast ever. Love you guys and all you do. Top work. Grazie. I think Fabio kind of missed the point of an appraisal there. But
I think that was Fabio, who lives upstairs from me as well.
He's the one that just stands at his window shouting at school kids every day.
Cormac, you are brilliant. Thanks, Fabio.
So yeah, cheers, Emily in New York State. I mean, please don't go because you'll have as many listeners as we have each week. But please, you know, grain of salt and all that love. Come on, fuck off. Right. Trailers.
Trailers.
Trailers. We had a Suicide Squad trailer this week. James Gunn, the Suicide Squad. This was more sort of action-packed to give us more an idea what the story is going to be, where we are in the movie, etc. And I've already got questions going on about this, but it's a fairly run-of-the-mill trailer, really, isn't it? You show a couple of the money shots, you set up the characters, give a few punchlines, but don't give too much away, and off you go.
I'm going to shock you. I actually quite enjoyed the trailer.
I did.
I'm liking the fact that they're using, you know, not bottom of the barrel kind of DC people, but people that I've just never really had an affiliation with or ever knew about. The one thing that's annoying me, and it annoyed me about the first movie, and it's Margot Robbie. It's like DC are hanging everything on Margot Robbie. And maybe that's not her fault. Maybe that's not her fault, but you know, let's be honest. If Harley Quinn wasn't in this movie would not have gotten made.
Yeah, because I had two things with this that's kind of not concerning me, but I think Idris Elba's role was supposed to be Will Smith Deadshot. There's a connection with his daughter. It's the same pretty much setup. He tried to kill Batman. He tried to kill Superman. You know, I think that was Deadshot. Brink coming back for the sequel, and when they couldn't get Will Smith, they had Idris Elba playing this other role and changed the character slightly. So that just screams a little bit of that. Harley Quinn, yeah, I think it would have got made without her, but I think she's getting paid her worth now because she'll bring a lot of bums to seats that they wouldn't have normally gone for it. I admit that. But the big thing for me was at the beginning where they talk about Idris Elba and he says he put Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet. Now, this is the same universe as Suicide Squad because we've got Joel Kinnaman and we've got...
Let's not start this. No, we don't know what DC Universe is in.
No, we do, because it's the same one that Ben Affleck was in when he was talking to Amanda Waller at the end of Suicide Squad, Ben Affleck's Batman. So he's with Henry Cavill's Superman. So in this universe, Idris Elba put Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet. When? When did that happen? Unless this is an offshoot. And it's...
This is like now running like Avengers timelines. Like, you know, where were all the Avengers when the other person's stories were happening? You know, where were the Avengers when this was happening? Where was he when this happened? You know, that doesn't really annoy me. That doesn't annoy me because I'm sure that they're going to branch into that. I'm sure they're actually going to talk about that. They'll get past that somehow.
Yeah, there'll be somewhere. Yeah, I think it looks a lot of fun. James Gunn, what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy, I know you didn't like the second one, but for the first one, for bringing these, like you say, these not bottom of the barrel, but these lesser known characters to an action-packed, funny film, and it'll draw new light and it's going to revitalize them, and hopefully we'll get more than just Batman, Superman, films every couple of years. I think it's going to really show up. James Gunn's really interesting, but it's what's his name? Is it Hammerhead? Sharkman? Is it Hammerhead?
Call him Shark. I like Sharkman.
King Shark. Sharkman.
No, I like Sharkman.
The Sharkinator. Sharkman. Voiced by Sylvester Stallone.
Is it?
Yeah. And I think it's going to be great. From what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy, I think this is going to be great. But the trailer was just very run-of-the-mill.
I agree. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the simple fact of, I think it's going to be that kind of rudish humor that I can actually take my son to see it. So it'll be like a PG-13
15.
Oh, is it a 15?
Rated R, yeah. It'll be R-rated.
I think I'll allow my son to watch it.
But it'll be on HBO Max.
Yeah, which I can totally get we can totally get it.
Only a bit of effort in Jeffin. And we also had a trailer for Candyman. Jordan Peele is bringing a remake, reboot, revitalization of the Candyman series. If it's one thing, when we talked about horrors last summer, they need to be making you feel creepy. They need to have this kind of aura about watching the whole film. When we watched It Follows, big, bright, open spaces, but it felt real... you know, just that you felt on edge watching it. You felt something was not right. And this just screams that. I've never really watched many of the Candyman films. I watched the first one once and just didn't get it.
You see, I'm the same. I watched Candyman years ago. Like, remember when horror kind of had that kind of renaissance in the 90s, you know, when the new Freddy's came out and then the new Halloween's came out and everybody was kind of revisiting old horror movies. Candyman kind of was one of them ones for me as well. Like, I don't know anything about the mythology. I don't know anything about it. I knew about the, you know, saying Candyman in the mirror. But the trailer to this was just, I don't know, like, Jordan Peele just gives off the air of knowing how to creep you out in weird ways, like the kind of, you know, cut out images of characters against light in the wall. I think that was just brilliant. You know, just everything about that trailer, you know. And then as the trailer goes on,
have you seen Us?
Us, yeah,
that did the same thing with the trailer, this sort of twisting it around and giving you a sense of unease. It's what I think they should have done with The Nightmare on Elm Street, where you can go into this kind of this paranoia of fear, this, you know, claustrophobia, this on edge of, you know, reality is not quite right, but it looks right, but it's just not quite, you know, just using a different lens or a different camera angle just to add suspense. And they didn't do it with Nightmare on Elm Street, but Us did it absolutely fantastically. And this looks, I'll give
it. I think Jordan Peele is kind of fermenting into a very, very good filmmaker. Like, he's getting towards a kind of hybrid between like David Fincher and you know, and Sam Raimi kind of thing. It's kind of, I'm liking it. Like, I'm really, really liking it.
Because his films, I wouldn't say they're horror. I would, obviously there's essence of horror in them, but it's more of a sort of like a dark thriller almost, you know. You don't get the jump scares. It's more of a sense of horror rather than immediate, you know.
But I think that's when me and you were doing the horror stuff last summer. I hate them horror movies where it's just constant jump scares. I could literally just be on screen for half an hour and just scream at the camera, you know, every 2 minutes and scare the shit out of people. Because that's...
Just like, randomly, just random points.
I mean, there's these, like, the Conjurings and all that shit. It's constantly, you know, a little bit of creepiness, then boom! And it's like, that's going to be scary. But I like them cerebral horror movies that are just going to fucking unease you. And then that scene where he's kind of, the part in the trailer where he's like picking his skin and he's taking his skin off, like that freaked me out. Freaked me out. And I was like, oh God, that's just fucking stinking. And, you know, they didn't show a lot of it, but you knew what he was doing. And it's kind of like, oh, I get it. It's creepy.
So what about, so you'll see that then? Would you see it with your...
100%.
Would you see it with your 11-year-old son?
I'm in the mood. I'm in this kind of hybrid kind of period of life now where wee man's getting older, going into secondary school or high school or wherever you are. He's going into high school and
he's going to be wearing a white shirt with jeans and white trainers if you're in Australia.
Yeah, so I'm trying to maybe introduce a wee bit of an older kind of over audience of him. I'm trying to introduce him to, I showed him Predator. And he loved Predator. So a lot of the 80s movies, but I'm trying to maybe just show him a wee bit of things that are older, you know. And I'm just I'm at that point now where I'm allowing him to hear an effing and Jeff. I'm allowing him to see a booby pop out every once in a while. You know what I mean? It's not gonna kill him.
See, I'm thinking now, he won't be ready for Pulp Fiction, would he?
Oh, no. Well, do you want to hear something really fucked up? My mother took me to see Pulp Fiction on my 14th birthday.
I think you told me this before.
My 14th birthday, my mother took me to see Pulp Fiction.
I went to see New Year's Day, year 2000, right? I went to see End of Days with my mum, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Not me, him and my mum, you know, he was in...
What a birthday!
January 1st, year 2000. I'd had a shit night the night before, and we went to the cinema on New Year's Day, hungover the fuck. And it starts and it comes up an 18. I'm like, I've got into a fucking 18 here. Okay, well, you know, I'm seeing an 18 at the cinema. I was only about fucking 16 at the time. And then if you know how the film starts, it starts with them sacrificing a snake. and taking its blood and feeding it to a baby. And I'm sat there next to my mum, like, wow, this is going to be a wild ride. And there was just one moment when Gabriel Byrne was having a threesome with a mother and a daughter. And I'm just sat there so uncomfortable. Like, this is.
Imagine having to sit and watch Ving Rhames get anally raped with your mother beside you and your English teacher behind you. And he was hammered too after the movie. He gave me the big thumbs up. And he went, "Aye, that was good, wasn't it?" Like, "Aye. Yes, Mr. McKellar, that was great."
This is 3 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, it's like, hey.
News. Right, news. Let's get it out of the way. Rachel Zegler. I'm rubbish with pronunciations. Star of the upcoming Steven Spielberg West Side Story has been cast as Snow White in the upcoming Disney adaptation.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's obviously going to be a live action one.
Yep, live action reboot. So, could be a musical.
Are we going to dance around the fact? Are we going to get?
People have mentioned it.
Real little people, or are we allowed to say that?
I wasn't talking about that bit. But go on. Dwarfs.
What bit? Oh, no, I don't think you're allowed to say dwarfs anymore.
I'm not little people of little stature. Rachel Zegler. Rachel.
Smaller humans.
She is a woman of dark skin, and she's playing a character called Snow White. It has attracted.
Oh, right. Okay. Did you know what?
Usual crowd.
I didn't know who Rachel Zegler was. So.
Yeah. Now, do you know the thing? When I read her name, I didn't know who she was. And then I saw her face, and I was like, probably not going to go see it. It never once crossed my mind to think, her skin isn't the right color to play Snow White.
Well, you know what?
And then I read the Twitter replies, and oh my God, there are.
But it's a fantasy. It's a fucking fantasy. You know what I mean?
There are so many angry people out there, Cor. People are really angry. Oh, yeah. It's fucking.
But she's not called Snow White because she's white, though.
I don't know.
It's not, you know what I mean?
I'm trying to think of a clever analogy.
But it's not as if
Dr. Neil Fox is not a real doctor.
He's not a real fox.
He's not a real fox.
But I just don't get it. I don't understand it. It's like this conversation that we had about a few months back about the whole Superman scenario. You know, comics change. Comics have different characters. Comics have different versions of superheroes. Yeah. Why can't we have different colored people? It just doesn't make any sense. I was trying to have this conversation, right? And it was basically with a person in work. And he's not like wrist running out there, like, but we were talking about this whole kind of thing. No, it's no buts. Like, but it was all this conversation about changing characters. You know, why do they have to put a person like this, like that? Why do they have to do this? And I said to them, well, let's put it like this, right? What? Why are you annoyed about it? And he's like, well, it's not annoyed, but you know, they were white and now they're going to be black. And I was like, yes, but why are you annoyed about it? Like, tell me why, physically, why anybody should be annoyed about this stuff. And he couldn't give me an answer. And it was like, well, that day, oh, like, what? There's no point to be annoyed about it. It doesn't make sense to be annoyed.
I just don't get the need to. I mean, she was taking it great on Twitter. She was probably like, loving it. She was just living it up, you know what I mean?
Damn, right.
She's got a top role. She's probably having best year of her life so far. She's
working with fucking Spielberg. She's gonna be in probably two of the biggest fucking movies in the next 5 years. Fuck you.
Nah, fair play to
her. I'm more interested in the dwarfs, because if my whole point of this is excuse me, if you're not allowed to say the word dwarf anymore, then what are they going to be called in the movie? Because we've just learned that Disney don't want Boba Fett's ship to be called Slave One anymore.
Oh, is that what that's were about?
Yeah, so they don't like the word slave, so they're not going to be calling Boba Fett's starfighter or whatever they're going to call it now as Slave One. So, like, if we're doing Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, what are we going to do with the word dwarf here?
Snow White and Bashful and Doc and Happy and
Snow
Sneed.
White and the seven people of smaller stature.
Well, writing, Chef Tebs at outlook.com. Are you allowed to say the word? Email him with your own. Email him with. Fuck yeah, I'm not going there.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Who'd have thought it? But a 78-year-old man in an action series has led to him injuring himself. Harrison Ford, 78 years old, starring as Indiana Jones, but of course he is, has injured his shoulder when returning for the role, which is being filmed in the UK at the minute. It was filmed up in Northumbria, near Whitby, I think, on his bike, out cycling.
Really?
And he was stopping for like pictures being taken with people. But the film in Indiana Jones and the whatever the fuck it's going to be called. This is when he was...
Is that the name of the movie? Indiana Jones and whatever the fuck it's going to be called. Whatever
the fuck it's going to be called. It'll be some bollocks. But apparently there's Nazis in this. There's been set photos seen of him punching Nazis.
Is that just Harrison Ford in the north of England?
So... yeah.
There are a lot of Nazis.
It's just him around Newcastle just punching Nazis. Yeah. Well, the Nazis in Newcastle. But yeah, look, what do you think?
It's more of a Whitehaven problem.
I mean, first of all, I'm interested in this. It's got Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Mads Mikkelsen in this. So I'm interested. It's Indiana Jones, so it's always fun. No Shia LaBeouf, which is great. Means I can go see it. But yeah, they've been filming around Bamborough Castle in Northumberland, the Scottish Borders, and the North Yorkshire Railway.
Well, we've all been stung by Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Let's be honest. We've all been stung by Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Gophers, fridge, monkeys.
Well, you see, the fridge thing didn't annoy me enough. Let's put it like this, right? Everybody said to me about, aliens, there's no Indiana Jones. Right, but you can deal with the Ark of the Covenant. You can deal with that, no problem. That's fine. Having all the ghosties coming out of a box, that's fine. But aliens is where you draw the line. You know what I mean?
I don't
get that. But I think there was bigger problems with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Obviously, Shia LaBeouf being one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
I thought Cate Blanchett wasn't great as a body in it either.
No.
I didn't get Ray Winston at all. He was just so. One way, other way, one way, other way, one way. And by the end of it, I was like, is he good? Is he bad? I don't really care. But I'll be interested. It's an Indiana Jones movie at the end of the day. I'm going to watch it.
Oh, yeah. Is it Spielberg directing it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. That's happening, whether we like it or not.
Hasn't Harrison Ford crashed a whole pile of planes as well?
Oh, yeah, he's crashed planes. He's crashed one on a golf course. It fell out of the Millennium Falcon when they were filming in the UK. When they were filming,
how did he survive that?
It didn't. It went like in the pilot seat and just fell. It was like when he was going down the ramp, and he kind of stumbled off the ramp. So yeah, he's crashed his plane and now he's injured his shoulder doing something. But look, he's an action star, baby. He's an action.
A 78-year-old action star.
Do you want more Transformers?
You're fucking right, I do. Is Wahlberg in it? Just tell me. Is Wahlberg in it?
Nah, I think this is this is Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Planet Earth is no longer just between the
bottom. So Shia LaBeouf's back in it then?
Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Basically they're bringing in like Dinobots and robot animals as well as robots.
Robotniks? Is that Robonosaurus?
Hippo rhinoceros. What the Flight of the Conchords call them? Hipporaposaurus.
Hippopotamus?
Hippopotamus. this is during the 90s. The Maximals, Predacons, and Terracons joined the existing battle on Earth between Autobots and Decepticons. I think it's following on from Bumblebee, the excellent, probably the best Transformers film. Well, it is the
Never
best.
Seen it. Never seen
really
it.
Good, really good. For what
is
it
this is, from, really. Is this because John Cena was in it?
It's because John Cena's in it, though I couldn't see him half the time. Hey, and but thank you, everybody. Tune in next week.
That's it. That's the best thing that's going to be said this week.
All the wrestling fans at home are just laughing their heads off, and everybody else is just going, "John Cena? Who he?
Why couldn't he see him?"
He was obviously on the film. So yeah, we're getting a 90s set Transformers, so a lot of grunge and Nirvana playing in the background and Alanis Morissette on the soundtrack, and yeah. Hey, look, if it's
just,
as good as
Alanis Morissette and Nirvana.
Bumblebee, just Alanis Morissette sat on a sofa knitting.
She's still married to Ryan Reynolds and Kurt Cobain hasn't blown his head off yet.
So, yeah, that's what I want from a Transformers film. Shazam, what did you think of Shazam?
I will still put down Shazam as my favorite DC movie.
Yes, I agree.
What have we turned it up? Yes, I agree.
I agree with you, and here are my reasons. Number one, I enjoyed it.
Number two, costumes.
Man, I've listened to numbers are going to go, oh, Jesus Christ, they're getting serious about this. Number three, I enjoyed Zachary Levi. Ah, fuck. They've got some updated costumes. They look more like the DC costumes. Basically, I think, if you remember the costumes from the first, they were very sort of plain, bold colours, not a lot of design, not a lot going on the outfits. And, well, I think...
Paul, is this a fashion podcast?
This is a fashion podcast. So now they've got a beautiful little cape that hangs just off the shoulder. It sort of still shows off some of the arm, but just drapes flowingly down the back, next to the hemline. One's blue, one's red.
What's the bulges look like?
There's distinct bulge. Good. I think it looks more like Zachary Levi is bulked up as opposed to the previous one where he looked like he had one of those comedy muscle suits on underneath his superhero app. You just like, mate, you just look like you've gone to a fancy dress party dressed as Superman. You know what I mean? Where you've like blown it up into then halfway through the night, one of like the ass and one of your biceps drops and you've just got to run home in the red.
His head did look very small in that costume.
It did. Yeah. It looks more proportioned now, but I think they did the whole Shazam family too quickly for me. I thought you could have got a lot more mileage out of having Shazam.
Listen, Paul, we're talking about DC. Yeah. Like, you know, they were happy. They were happy with fucking he whose name who won't be mentioned this week. They were happy for him to make a 4-hour fucking movie, you know, of nothing. You know, so to say that the family was introduced too early, probably the right time, because let's be honest, if they'd have waited another two movies, it would have been fucked up by then.
But Shazam for me now, it was great fun. I absolutely love that film. I think it's great fun. It's not trying to be anything. It's just telling a story, and it's a good movie. It's a good movie, but a lot of people didn't like it. Are we going to talk about Loki? How far into Loki are you?
I'm still only one. We've got bogged down with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like I know you give me that look every time I mention Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I'm gonna keep saying it. I'm enjoying it so far, and I'm not expecting much. All right, I'm enjoying it so far, and I'm not expecting much.
Which season are you on?
We are very close to the end of season four.
Right. Okay.
I don't even know how many seasons are in it. I don't know.
Too many.
You feel it. It's like you were in a relationship with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, and it's really, really hurt you.
Give me a reason. A couple of top reasons what attracted you to watching it.
I thought you were threatening me there. Give me a reason.
Give me a fucking reason. I'll turn my fucking hand off your face. Come on.
The only reason that I'm watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is because it has the Marvel name on it.
Yes, that's it. Your heroine. It was heroine before WandaVision, Loki, and Falcon Winter Soldier, right? Very soon. I mean, I think you're already past a certain point where it meets up with the films at some point.
Oh, and, you know, yes, they already discussed the movies and stuff like so.
What I'm saying is there are certain events coming up where the TV show has to follow the movies. And I just think that the reason you watch it is to be part of the MCU. And I think, anyway, go on.
I think we are at now, I think they've mentioned Captain America disappearing, Steve Rogers disappearing. So we're obviously past Civil War.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, so we're just at the point of Civil War.
Who's the big bad guy at the minute?
I can't even remember. The Scottish guy has made his human hybrid.
This is incredible radio, by the way.
Daisy has just finished her stuff with Ghost Rider.
Has she decided to defy authority and gone and done her own thing, even though
people... She always does. That's what Daisy
does.
Oh,
right. Yeah, that's just Daisy.
That's what Daisy does, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, Shazam 2's coming, and I'm looking forward to it. And then we're getting The Rock as Black Adam. And then we're going to get Shazam versus Black Adam. And then we're going to get Shazam and Black Adam versus... He-Man. And then He-Man and Battle Cat.
Awesome. Where's that coming out?
I don't know. So, if you've not seen Loki, I'll just talk about himself. So, from episode 3 onwards, we really get a feel for Loki.
Right, I'll talk about the first episode, no problem.
Yeah, we did last week as well. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first episode. I can tell you about episode 4 of season 4 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if you want. We can talk about
good, thanks. You're good, thanks. I'll tell you what, I have been watching an O.J. Simpson documentary on Disney.
Okay. Is it the people versus O.J. Simpson?
No, it's the making of a hero. Not making of a hero.
Making of a hero?
Made in America. O.J. Simpson made in America.
Oh, yes. I've watched that. I've seen that before, yeah.
Just got
to
the trial.
There's another great one. There's another great one. It was made around the same time. It was about the L.A. riots.
Right.
And it explains a lot about the, like, this is even, like, O.J. Simpson comes into that, you know, Rodney King and O.J. Simpson and stuff like that there. Like, O.J. Simpson trial was obviously the end of that kind of L.A. riots kind of thing. The Rodney King stuff kind of started it off, like, but it's very, very interesting. Like,
I think he did it, you know. I mean, don't tell me the ending. Don't tell me the ending.
I don't know. Have you got to the car chase bit yet?
Oh, the car chase. I remember my brother having that on a VHS. He bought it off
I got the bus up to Belfast with a few friends, and I was in Virgin Megastores on the high street in Belfast, and they were playing it on the TVs in Virgin Megastores, and I watched the fucking Bronco Chase in Belfast. I can't even remember even what age it was. It must have only been about 10 or 11. Yeah. I sat and watched it. I had no clue what was going on. Like,
my brother bought it on a VHS. They sold it as a VHS from the point the traffic cops found him. Right until giving himself up, they put it on a VHS and he was watching it with his mates and he bought it for like £4. But you just think, if some guy in Leeds gets this VHS, how many millions of them were around the world being sold? That news company made a fortune.
I'm trying to think who would have been comparative. It would have been like Neville Southall murdering his wife and then going down the M24. In a Morris Minor.
Did you see what happened whenever Neville Southall on Twitter? He gave his Twitter account up once a week to or once a month to a charity, and let them for a day tweet out of his name to all of his followers to get more exposure. And the first one he did it was to a woman who helped men. Who had a compulsion to dress as a giant baby. And it was therapy, dressing as a giant baby, treating them like babies, grown men, hairy asses in nappies. And Southall just got absolutely destroyed on Twitter for it. All right, Neville, don't be a baby. Blocks, you were blocking people left, right, and center. And he's like, I'm trying to do a good thing, and you'll just turn it into something strange. And they're like, you don't sound it strange, do you, Neville? Because
it sounds awful strange. It sounds odd to me, like Neville likes to dress up like a baby.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm Agent Scott.
And I'm Cam, the provocateur.
And together we are the Spy Hards Podcast. Every Tuesday, we decode the best and the worst of spy cinema to decipher if they make the knock list.
That's right. The knock list is the need-to-see official classics of the spy genre. The best of the best, so to speak. Nobody does it better. From Bourne to Bond and Powers to Palmer, you can bet we will cover it.
So subscribe now and revel in the audio equivalent of a smooth martini. Just search for SpyHards, that's SpyHards on all major podcast apps. And let's just hope you find us before we find you.
Well, over the past week, we have been doing a unofficial poll of people I've met. And
you've met Guy Ritchie?
No. But no, I asked people what their top 5 favorite Guy Ritchie films were, and we had like 15 responses on Twitter, and I asked about seven people at work and maybe a couple of other people.
Shout
really
people out the window while you're self-isolating.
Yeah, it wasn't 20, but I can take that as a definitive representation of the worldwide population.
So what basically what you're saying is that you've got enough data that you can actually filter out and ratio down the perfect percentage of what the favorite Guy Ritchie movies are worldwide.
100%. Would not have an issue with this. Okay.
No issues whatsoever.
No. It's like I said, I added the scores up and it took me a long time because I had to do maths. And I did the maths and basically I give points for like who can, if you get a number one, I give you 5 points and whoever had the most points become number one. But then I realized you could get voted number one. Anyway, it took a long time and it a good couple of hours, to be honest. But number five, top five, what would you go for? What would you be in your top five?
My top five would be in no particular order.
Throw a couple out there.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Snatch.
Yeah, I think Snatch is better than Lockstock.
Yeah, Lockstock would obviously be there because it's a good movie. The two Sherlocks. I love the two Sherlocks.
Number five, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
So that for me was like a Robert Downey Jr. film that just worked for him. You know when you find somebody who's right for a part, whose shtick is just the right side of not irritating. Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow. Three films was enough. Four films is starting to grit. You know, he was just on the right side of not too overbearing. And Robert Downey Jr. had that. I love the chemistry with Jude Law. I think the world building, it looked fantastic. It's just one of those things about Sherlock Holmes movies, though. They just keep churning them out, don't they? Every single thing is Sherlock Holmes. But at the time when this was remade, I think it was a breath of fresh air. Richie found something different.
It's like Agatha Christie, isn't it? Every few years, you know, the Sherlock Holmes stuff kind of gets brought up. I'm a fan of the TV show Sherlock as well. Like, I really enjoy the TV show Sherlock. I don't know why, but I enjoy the kind of pomposity of, you know, of the character of Sherlock. You know, I enjoy if it's in a, you know, it's original Arthur Conan Doyle setting in the late 1800s, early 1900s. I enjoy the contemporary with Bembeschenach Cumdishlock. You know, I enjoy that. You know, I enjoy, you know, the different iterations of it. I bought all the Sherlock Holmes, you know, complete things off Google for 79p.
So Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes then, what did you make of, because I think I was hooked on it from, I knew I was enjoying it. You know, when there's a moment in a film where you kind of just watch it and you're like, yeah, this is, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's got to do something to do with Guy Ritchie, man, to be honest. You know,
it took what it took in Snatch, from the sort of the slow motion, the fight scene, the break and the fight down, and he sort of put that spin on it where it was using his intellect and it was still that. Everything just worked. You know, it wasn't there for the
Guy,
sake.
Guy Ritchie is at his best when he's making a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. And I know that sounds very simplistic, but Guy Ritchie's at his... he's at his very best when he's making a Guy Ritchie movie. And Sherlock, his deviation of Sherlock is a Guy Ritchie movie. It's got the elements of Lockstock. It's got the elements of Snatch. It's perfect.
See, Man from U.N.C.L.E., I think, veered too far away from being a Guy Ritchie film. There were still elements of it, that Guy Ritchie style, but I think that it just was a bit too run-of-the-mill. You know, it was just a bit too mainstream and nobody remembered Man from U.N.C.L.E. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was a shame. Number four. Aladdin.
What?
I did ask a couple of under fives.
Well, do you know what that is to me? That is people who don't know that Guy Ritchie made movies like Rock and Roller or Swept Away or Revolver or The Gentleman.
Rock and Roller was sixth. In fact, I won't tell you any about this, but Rock and Roller was sixth. But that's from me showing somebody a list of films and some people not recognizing them and going, Aladdin. I'll say Aladdin.
Do you want me to be completely honest with you?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that Guy Ritchie made Aladdin.
Did you not?
I don't know how that passed me by. It was a complete blind spot. But I was whenever we started talking about Guy Ritchie, I was like, I suppose I better bone up on a bit of the Guy Ritchie movies. And I went to seen Revolver. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember Revolver. Very confusing. I've seen Gentleman. I was like, oh yeah, I actually quite like the Gentleman. Seen fucking Rockin'. Oh yeah, it's Lock, Stock, Snatch. And then fucking Aladdin popped up, and I was like, I've obviously made it. I made a mistake there somewhere. So I went in it, and of course Guy Ritchie's made Aladdin. And I was like,
yeah.
I never knew this. I never knew it. Now, it doesn't increase my liking of Aladdin. I still think it's pretty poor. I think we spoke about this before. Like, it is one of the worst live-action remakes that Disney have done. You know, but again, I don't think anything's going to touch the Jungle Book for me on that. I don't think anything will ever be as good as that. But again, I genuinely didn't know that Guy Ritchie made Aladdin.
Yeah, and it was one of the first times you'd been given so much money to make such a tentpole film, and it nearly got derailed when the first trailer came out and everybody was looking at blue Will Smith with Will Smith's face floating around on top of a blue animation. And you just got to think, oh, this has got to be better than this. This has got to be better. And I've got to admit, it was. There were some catchy songs in there. Will Smith could throw out a...
I know, but it's like, how much creative input can you put into that kind of a movie, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, it is massively under control, because you have to follow beat for beat the exact same structure as the Aladdin cartoon. So there's no, you know, there is no way that he can put his Guy Risky or Ritchie-esque, you know, things into the movie. And I'm not asking for fucking slow motion fight things, or I'm not asking for Cockney gangsters. You know, I'm not asking that, but there's no way that you can put your own spin. And it's very hard, you know, even for talented people to put their own spin on movies that they're being asked to, or that have been storyboarded to hell. You know, you look at things, the Russo brothers and stuff, what they've done with Marvel. You know, those movies are storyboarded to hell. And for them to put their own input and their own mark on those movies is a testament to them, because that's they're fantastic filmmakers. But there was nothing new in this Aladdin movie, like nothing other than a big blue Will Smith.
See, I think that is what Disney go for with these. They don't want anything new. They know what formula works. It's why the Big Mac hasn't changed in 20, 30, 40 years, because the formula works. And they use that same formula, and all they want is a wise old hand behind the camera who knows where to point a camera, who knows how to edit a film together and tell a story and produce their film for them. Jon Favreau happened to knock it out of the park. I mean, Lion King did 1.6 billion and he literally just did it shot for shot.
Yeah.
You know, it was unbelievable. But, you know, I think he took that literally. They're sitting down in front of him and say, with Aladdin, this is what we want. They're going to sing these songs. You can change the songs a little bit, but we won't give you full... What is this saying? Hot Fuzz. I won't give you the full Cate Blanchett. We'll give them full carte blanche to do whatever they want. But I think, you know, if you're investing $300 million in a film, you can afford... 10 million to get Guy Ritchie to make sure it's done properly. Because last thing you want is a fucking solo Star Wars film debacle where you're having to get rid of your guys halfway through because it's not what you wanted.
I know, but I still that's different.
I want to see Lord of Brothers solo.
But that's different, though. That's different because, you know, let's be honest, a lot of these films are getting made now and they haven't a fucking clue from start to finish what they're going to do with it. You know, it's very clear, even with Star Wars, even J.J. Abrams has recently come out and said that they didn't know how to end it. You know, basically he admitted to just handing it over, you know, hoping that somebody with some talent would be able to write a story into it, and they didn't. And that's why he had to come back to try and get a story out of it. But, you know, on this hand, these Disney classics are already made. And I don't know, like, it just seems to me that why would you want to pay somebody like Guy Ritchie, whatever his fee was, to come in to make a movie that's already been storyboarded to hell, you know, to just follow the procedure, you know, follow the points on the graph?
Because you want somebody who can frame shots properly and do the special effects and edit it.
You can't do that.
I'm
you
sure
could there's... probably do that. If somebody said to you, Paul, you're going to get 10 million to fucking to film a shot-for-shot remake of Aladdin, do you not think you could do it?
To understand which cameras to use, which lenses to use, and which cinematographers to have.
I could do it.
Fuck off. Someone gave
Prove
you
me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Well, I was going to use this 10 million for stocks and bonds, but fuck it. Number three, Lock Stock, his debut film.
I'm curious now to see what the top two are. Because we all know that there's only two great Guy Ritchie movies.
I'd agree with you there. There's two great Guy Ritchie. It'll be a lot of fun. Lock Stock, I saw on DVD when we'd rented it, or we'd rented the video. And it was one night when you like your mates around and having a drink and everything, and we just put it on in the background. And I don't think, I've probably watched it a couple of times since then. But it was one of them films that just came at the right time. I think it was just the beginning of all this sort of culture in the UK of these football factory, football hooligan
films. It was Cool Britannia.
It was geezers are no longer in, you know, tracksuits and stuff. They're wearing, you know, sharp suits, and it created this whole lifestyle almost. You know, it just, if you think what Peaky Blinders did for that kind of bad boy look, people, the hats and all the beards with the little twisty fucking.
We all know what Peaky Blinders 1923 culture did to nowadays. All right, we all know exactly what that. Well, you're right, actually. Do you know what I mean? All those fucking fiddly mustaches. Yeah, and stuff. Fiddly mustaches. You know what? You're right. I was gonna criticize you there. I was gonna laugh at what you said, but you're actually right.
Yeah, Peaky Blinders has done it exactly. If you look at. I won't mention the barber's name, but basically I went to this barber's the other day to have the old trim and everything, and I says, what's the difference between you and them in town that charge 25 quid for this? And he goes, they do it in bow ties. Lock Stock, yeah, look, it was one of those, I've probably watched it a few times, you know, and I think it laid the groundwork for Snatch. I think it did a lot of things right, and I think it's that original one, but I think a lot of British cinema has got to thank for it.
I love Lock Stock.
Yeah.
I watched Lock Stock. Actually watched it about 2 months ago. It was on TV, and it's one of those movies for me that doesn't get the recognition that it deserves. I know a lot of people talk about Guy Ritchie and stuff like that there, but Lock Stock was the first, as you say there, when Lock Stock came out, it was the Cool Britannia stuff. It was, you know, Tony Blair, blah, 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 Oasis, you know, all that jazz. But when Lock Stock came out, there was very few British gangster movies. And it set the standard going forward for about 5 years. Every single movie that came out was a gangster movie that was made in the UK. It was either like a football fucking hooligan movie or a gangster movie. You know, you look at movies like, look at movies like Layer Cake. Would Layer Cake have got made if Lock Stock wasn't around? Not a fucking hope. You know, there's so many movies that came out of the UK in those late 90s, early 2000s, even mid 2000s, that owe a lot to Guy Ritchie in that movie. You know, you look at some, even like the performances in it, you know, bit part ones, Vaz Blackwood in Lock Stock, just insanely brilliant, you know, just everything about Lock Stock was great. I thought the script was amazing, you know, even to pull people like your man Fleming and Statham, and like they were not big stars at the time, you know, they were just founders. I think somebody had said that of the 44 speaking pieces in Lock Stock, 11 had never acted before.
Well, this is what we're going to ask you about this here, right? So looking at this main cast, Jason Statham was an unknown before this, and obviously he's gone on to.
Super. He was a fucking. Wasn't he a swimmer or a fucking diver or something like that? Diver, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was doing diving, high board diving. Dexter Fletcher has gone on to become an award-winning director. Eddie the Eagle, Bohemian Rhapsody, Rocket Man, that kind of stuff. Jason Fleming has gone on to a few bits of stuff. He's done quite a lot, actually.
I hear his voice on the TV all the time. He does the voice for everything. He does fucking Tesco's, he does Asda, you name it, he does the voice for it.
But he's in, you know, he's done a lot of stuff. He's in Pennyworth. He's one of those sort of backup actors they always sort of bring in. Nick Moran, who was the lead in this, he's done a lot of acting since. But this is the only thing I can think of him in. I couldn't name anything else that he's been in.
There was a lot of he done a lot of like British TV in the mid 90s, like, but I can't remember anything of substance that he's done. I might be wrong, like, you know what I mean? He might have a varied career on the stage or whatever he's been doing.
Look, he has had a very varied career and he's done a lot of films. He's been in Goal 3 and all them. But I couldn't sort of, to be honest, I had to IMDb his name just to check it wasn't it, Brad. And I just think out of the four leads guys in this part of the group, the one who was the lead is the one that hasn't really done as well as all the rest of them, in my opinion. But still, good.
You can always tell the breakout stars. Like Statham was the breakout star of Lockstock.
Yeah, it was. Now, number two. Bless you. If he was a bitch this season, isn't it?
It's awful. Sorry.
Number two.
Uh-huh. I'm curious.
King Arthur. I made him sneeze with excitement. It's like you just ejaculated happiness.
All right, I'm going to say this, right? I watched King Arthur not that long ago. And I stayed up the other night and watched a Nicolas Cage movie called Season of the Witch. Right?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. I would put King Arthur in that vein as well.
No, see, you're wrong.
Okay. It is fucking awful, Paul. No, it's not. Jude Law is fucking awful. Charlie Hunnam is awful.
Charlie Hunnam is awful, I'll give you that.
Awful. It's just one of the most turgid movies I've had to watch.
I actually suggested you should watch King Arthur because I saw it a couple of years ago and I think it's great fun.
But it's not fun. It's not even fun.
And I suggest you watch it. Now, I did two ways of doing the scores for this, and these top five always came out around the same. And everybody I was asking at work, and yeah, both works.
You must have just contacted the only people that have actually watched the fucking movie. I read today, this is how shocked I was. I was actually reading, doing a wee bit of fucking research on it, and I thought, you know what, I need to have a wee bit of backup just to fucking see what the crack was about this King Arthur. It made a lot of movies do, but it made £30 million or dollars less than what its budget was. They wanted it to be a six.
Yeah.
They wanted six movies of this.
Six movies. They didn't already say there's a sequel. They said it's going to be six, so there'll be different knights having their spin-offs, and it was a whole...
I understand that there is a lot to this. You know, there's a Myths and Legends podcast that I would have listened to years ago, and they went into the Arthurian legend, you know, quite a bit, and there are multitudes of storylines to King Arthur and all this. Now, a lot of them are fucking weird, but there's a lot of stories to it, but fuck me, six movies when all anybody really wants to see is the story of the Sword and the Stone. That's it.
So, Charlie Hunnam, granted, but you said before, and this is what I'm going to come back to, you said before, if they've storyboarded the film out, such as Aladdin, and then get Guy Ritchie in to make it, why aren't they letting him make a Guy Ritchie film? This is where somebody's gone to him and said, here's King Arthur, go make a Guy Ritchie King Arthur film. With Cockney guards, you get over here, you fucking scumbag, you know, and all that shit. Robin Hood tried to pull it off after this, and Robin Hood was even worse. But this, for me, the reason I wanted to watch it is obviously because of David Beckham's starring role.
Well, I'll be honest with you. When you told me Beckham was in it, I actually watched it that night. And I was like, I gotta see this. I got it. And then I was halfway watching it, and I said to Rachel, I was like, listen, apparently Beckham's in this. And she was like, David Beckham. And I was like, apparently he's in it. Like, I don't know how much or how little. And she was like, okay. And then I was thinking to myself, how are they going to have him in it? Like, what are they going to do? Obviously, there's going to be an in-joke there somewhere. And of course, the in-joke was, he's ugly. That's it. That was it. And you can 100% look at Guy Ritchie, who was sitting across his big fucking manor house, shooting fucking pheasant with David Beckham and all his sons with their willies out or whatever they want to do, and they're all fucking boom. Do you know what would be great, David? Boom. What's that? If you were fucking butt ugly. Oh, you're so funny. That is so funny. Yeah, it would be horrible. Wouldn't people? It'd be fucking horrible if I was ugly. Wouldn't it be fucking horrible? That'd be so funny. And that was it.
But what I admired about the film was what I admired about Sherlock Holmes, that it took a very well-trodden franchise, well-trodden property, such as King Arthur, such as Sherlock Holmes, and he did his own thing with it. He did something different. It was, there were moments that was not unwatchable, but a little some heavy
people, there's some people, like I was more upset that Aidan Gillen was in the movie, and I was just like, oh, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
I mean, I didn't expect the giant snake.
Ireland's own. Ireland's own. And I just, I don't know. Like, I just...
I thought you enjoyed that.
It just reminded me of movies like Season of the Witch and all that stuff. And it was just, it just seemed, it was so poor. I just didn't enjoy it. And it was like, it was like pulling teeth. Watching it was...
Do you know the thing that I once heard about this was... Charlie Hunnam actually turned down appearing in 50 Shades of Grey to being King Arthur instead. So they went from fucking somebody else in 50 Shades of Grey to fucking himself. Right, number one, what do you think it is?
Well, it's got to be Snatch, isn't it?
The world's favourite Guy Ritchie film.
It's got to be Snatch. If it's swept away, I'm going to be very, very, very annoyed.
It is Snatch. I want to get this out of the way. Is it Green Tongue?
Green Tongue?
Green Tongue, obviously,
yes
being.
No. Yeah.
Green Tongue, obviously, is something that we have founded on this podcast. We're fighting to eradicate Green Tongue from the world.
Yeah.
It's of the belief that only people of the accent can use the accent. Mm-hmm. And if you mimic that accent to mock that culture, it's called Green Tongue.
Yeah.
Did Brad Pitt?
I will say no.
For this reason,
I know a lot of people of the traveling community. Okay, I know, from my times down in Oma, there's a lot of people in the traveling community, and they have a particular way of speaking, right, and only local dialects generally change the way they speak, right? Now, yes, there was Green Tongue in the movie. I understand that, you know, but a few of them, I think it was it Fleming? Jason Fleming was his brother?
Yeah.
His accent was actually spot on. You know, I didn't have a problem with it whatsoever. I think that they gave a very realistic depiction of a traveler's accent. Now, I'm not saying all travelers speak like that, but in my approach and some of the travelers that I've come into contact with, the accent was near enough. But yes, it was a joke. You know, I think the thing about it was Brad Pitt wanted to be in the movie. He couldn't do a Cockney accent. So the part was written as a joke because a lot of people's problems with Lockstock was they didn't understand the accents. So Guy Ritchie basically did a joke where he wouldn't be able to understand it. Brad Pitt wouldn't be able to understand it. The cast wouldn't be able to understand it. And the audience wouldn't be able to understand it. And that was the end joke that they had with this accent. Now, yes, it's a bit of a piss take, but I don't think it's Green Tongue. I find it like 100%. Jared Butler, 10 times more offensive than Brad Pitt's act. I'll rephrase that. 100 times more offensive than Brad Pitt.
See, the thing for me with Snatch is Snatch would be my favourite Guy Ritchie film. Abso-fucking-lutely. It just takes everything that he did with Lockstock, and I think he refined it very well. I think it's a better cast.
Yeah.
I think too much reliance on his mates. I think he brought in, you know, quality actors. I was looking down the list earlier. I mean, look, Ewan Bremner. I'm just looking here. Benicio Del Toro, Sam Douglas, Dennis Farina.
Oh, Dennis Farina. Amazing in everything he's in. Even doing Unsolved Mysteries. He was brilliant.
Jason Fleming, Alan Ford, Robbie G, Goldie of dance hall fame. Stephen Graham, I met him once in Newcastle. Got a photo with him, and then when he were walking away, I said to my mate, who's that? And he goes, oh, it's Stephen Graham from the film. So I went, oh, bloody hell. So I didn't actually know it was him. Lenny James, Vinnie Jones, getting his role padded out, and this was sort of bringing Brad Pitt, we obviously mentioned. Jason Statham is in there. Mike Reed, the most cockneyest geezer there is, Mike Reed is in there.
Frank Butcher.
Frank Butcher, yeah, of course. Saul Campbell had an uncredited role as a bouncer.
I never knew that. Or I can't remember it. Maybe I've suppressed it.
Yes, there's a moment. It was two bouncers were stood on a door, and one of them, Saul Campbell. But yeah, absolutely. I think the story was a lot more. I think there was a lot more moving parts to it, but it sort of brought them together a lot better than Lockstock. I think Lockstock suffered from the ending not quite being as sharp as it could have been. Natch sort of, it had that kind of twist ending that people sort of were starting to get accustomed to with like Sixth Sense and films like that starting to do it, and it had this kind of twist, but it sort of, it felt like a real payoff, and it felt like one of those proper British gangster films. That just was, I thought, yeah, it's his best film beyond a doubt.
The one story that I read, which I find really funny, was that they wanted Sean Connery to play Bricktop. And basically, he'd never really heard of Guy Ritchie before. So they did a screening of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels for him. So he went in and he watched Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And he came out and he spoke to, obviously, I don't know if it was Guy Ritchie, but he said to the producers, you know, that there is a very good movie. And they were like, oh, here we go. And then he just turned around and went, but you wouldn't be able to afford me, darling. And he walked away. I was like, yeah, that's good.
Wait to be asked how much it is. It's just like,
yeah, that's good. You wouldn't be able to afford me. And I was just like, you know what? If you are that person, like Sean Connery in his later years, I think he was offered, what was it? He was offered for Lord of the Rings. It was like 20% of the gross of the movie. Like that, and he turned it down because he didn't understand it.
He just didn't understand it. Why would anybody want to go be walking around New Zealand for a year?
I mean, it's not as if, I don't think Sean Connery would look back at it and go, oh, damn it. I missed out on what that extra other fucking 100 million on. Now I'm just going to have to put up with the 60 million that I have in the bank. Oh, rats.
Well, me and Roger Moore sit on a Caribbean island somewhere. So, fucking good on you, man. yeah, I mean, look, Alan Ford that came in his place in the Bricktop, I think some actors do the menace thing really well. And for me, horror comes from sort of, like I say, it's menace, it's fear. It's people like Bricktop exist.
Yeah.
They talk the way they do, and they back up what they say they'll do. And there's a lot of people out there like that. And that is scary. Somebody who is that unhinged. That
The good thing about, what is his name, Alan Ford?
Yeah.
The good thing about him is I think him as a character in Snatch set the gold standard going forward for that type of criminal underworld person, where he comes across, if you see him walking down the street, just wouldn't even think twice of who he is, but when he speaks, you listen to every single word that he says. You know, you look at things like in Peaky Blinders, Tom Hardy's character in Peaky Blinders would never exist without Bricktop, never ever exist without him.
But I would say the Bricktop is probably the best depiction of one of these London British gangsters since Don Logan from Sexy Beast.
Yeah, 100%.
It's that kind of menace. Ben Kingsley stood there in a little white shirt and stuff, you know, but it's the aura of him. In fact, I'm going to
say. Yes. Me and you talk about this maybe every 6 months, 8 months, and how good Sexy Beast is, and how I don't understand how people still don't talk about Sexy Beast. Like, I genuinely don't understand how they don't talk about it.
Do you know what? I'm this might be news to you, but I'm a big lad. I'm a very big lad. I'm a Ray Winston level big lad. And when I go on holiday to a really hot place, I get a cocktail and I lay down on a sun lounger just for maybe half an hour, just saying in my head, It's so fucking hot. And I just do the rain winter thing at the beginning of 6 weeks. Every time I go on holiday, I wear my shorts, nothing on top. I'm fucking Ray Winston in Sexy Beast. I'm sat next to a pool. And I just say to myself in my head, it's so fucking hot. And then I go inside and get covered up, but I just do it. But yeah, look, no, it's... I mean, Jason Statham as well, I think he was really setting himself out as a leading man at this point. It's still rough around the edges, but I mean, look, he's not in films for his acting ability. He can act, but we want him to kick people's heads off and talk in a scary way. And
Action star, baby.
So where would you, what would you have had in your top five?
100%. Snatch would more likely be number one. Number two, Lockstock. Number three would go Sherlock. Number four, Rock and Roller. Number five, Game of Shadows.
Yeah, so Game of Shadows weren't even in there. Nobody had even mentioned that, even picked that. I mean, I didn't exactly have a large catchment list. I mean, look, honourable mentions. We've talked about... Man from Uncle, The Gentleman, that's been out recently. That surprised me, did The Gentleman, because I thought it was going to be worse than it was.
It's not good when you start off like that, though, is it? You know, you look at like Guy Ritchie's one of those directors, right? Everyone knows Guy Ritchie's movies. Everybody knows that he made a couple of really, really good movies, but you're always tentative to go to a Guy Ritchie movie because you don't know if it's gonna be shit or not. You know, it's like M. Night Shyamalan. You know, we all know that M. Night came up with Sixth Sense. We all know this. But, you know, are we really going to go see some other movies? Because, you know, there's the odd shite one that's dropped in. We all remember The Happening.
I remember The Happening. Jesus Christ, do I remember that. But then I saw, it was on a plane to, I think it might have been to America. I watched Split. Mm-hmm. And I was bang into it. I'm like, this is fantastic. I thought that was outstanding. And I can't wait to go see Glass. And I went to the cinema. I went on a master date to the cinema to see Glass because I had nobody to go with. So I went on my own.
Is that what's called a master date?
It's what I call it. It's when you go on a date by yourself to pleasure yourself.
I thought like you went with your an old teacher or something.
No. No, master, like, it rhymes with masturbate.
I got that ball.
Let me explain it for you.
That didn't.
When a boy gets to a certain age, have you seen The Wrath of Man? Or Wrath of Man?
It's pretty new. I haven't.
Pretty new, yeah.
Have you seen it, Paul? Because I know you haven't been to the cinema.
It's yeah. Go and watch
some
it.
Some guy ran past the house and threw a DVD through the window and shouted, "Guy Ritchie!"
Thought you might like to do a podcast.
I hear you do a right podcast. See you next week. Okay, Guy Ritchie, bye. What?
Have you ever considered the work of John Travolta? You know you can follow us on Twitter, can't you? I don't have a phone anymore. Bye.
Sorry, bye.
Why did you keep running past? I didn't stop and talk. I don't know. I'm just going
to... I had a panic attack. I think I'm having a heart attack.
But it sounds like you're falling down a drain. Right. So there we go. Snatch is the winner, the best Guy Ritchie film in the world.
Yeah. Well done, Guy Ritchie.
Well done, Guy.
Well done, Guy Ritchie. Well done.
It's like Steve Wright in the afternoon, isn't it? Where they're doing on a big radio. Oh,
I wish I had a soundboard and then I could make whoop, he sounds like rockets taking off.
My name is Paige, and I'm the host of Reverie True Crime. Reverie means to daydream, but even daydreams can become nightmares. Come join me and get lost in horrific reverie about true crimes and eerie events. Reverie True Crime Podcast, available wherever you stream your favorite podcasts.
Okay, what are we going to do next?
Musicals. Let's finally get to do Cats. I want to do Cats.
Yes.
Let's do Cats.
Are we doing a combined menu?
We'll do a combined menu.
Let's create one now out of...
Okay.
Right. I'm going to put forward some. The worst is Cats. It's the fucking worst. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Please tell me when you're going to watch it, and I'm going to watch it at the same time as you.
Okay.
We'll master date together.
Well, Cats, obviously Rocky Horror is going to be in it.
Rocky Horror has got to be in it. Rocky Horror Picture Show. I tried to talk to a lad at work. This lad at work, amazing posture.
if that is the only good thing you have to say about him.
No. He's a nice lad. You know, he's like 21, 22. He watched Greatest Showman and he was speaking to one of the lads at work. He goes, I didn't really get it. We're all circuses and stuff, wasn't it? And I went, right. And I'm looking at him and he's like, permatan, eyebrows have done everything, but great posture. I keep telling him he's got great posture. It just to make him feel uncomfortable about it because he doesn't know why I'm telling him. But he's got great posture. He won't have many headaches when he gets older. I don't see what the problem is with complimenting somebody's posture. Anyway, I said to him, you've got to see Rocky Horror Picture Show. And he Googled it at work. And up popped Tim Curry, lounging in his throne, full makeup on. And he looks at me and goes, what am I going to want to watch that for? And I went, it will change your fucking life.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping he'll have watched it. Rocky Horror's got to be in there. Best musical ever. I mean, would you have Grease?
I think I would have Grease in it simply because of the dirty words in the songs that you kind of miss, or maybe it can get like an honorable mention. Hold on, I'm going to have a
look here. I am going to actually say I'm not going to include Hamilton.
You can include it if you want.
No, because it's a filming of a stage performance. And yes, it is a film, technically, but I'm talking full-blown motion picture musicals. Have you seen Greatest Showman?
Yeah. I love The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. Les Mis. I think Hugh Jackman can belt a song, but Les Mis, I think, is...
I don't know. Les Mis just seems very depressing.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
I keep going back to Little Shop of Horrors over and over again.
See, I haven't seen... Would you count the Blues Brothers as a musical? No, we've done already Blues Brothers, haven't we?
We've done it, but... Oh, no, we didn't include it in our menu, actually. But, see, is that a musical? Do the songs move you on to the next part of the story? Or do they just go somewhere, sing, and then move on?
Genuinely, there was a musical called Funny Face, and I genuinely thought it said Fanny Face, and I was like, oh, we've got to see that.
That is a musical. I watched Into the Woods.
Can't get past Corden, though. Corden.
Chicago. See, I was watching Chicago and I wasn't enjoying it, but it's got some catchy tunes. Very catchy tunes.
Mm.
What about Oliver? Oliver with the...
Oliver Reed?
Oliver Reed. Oliver.
Well, I think, why don't this... Why don't we just say we're going to do musicals and then we can decide.
Yeah, so look, probably Rocky Horror is going to be in there. Cats is definitely going to be the fish dish.
Yeah.
Tweet us at PodMovieChef with your opinions on what the best and the worst musicals are. Cormac, tell us all about the Instagram account.
Yep.
It's gone. is anything hot going on over there? Have we got pictures of women on yachts and... Pictures of
you. It's me and the refrigerator.
I mean, how many followers have we got now? This is your
like 1,000. This is your
project I gave you.
Like 1,000 or something.
1,000 followers.
Yep.
Okay, let's just have a look, shall we?
We're one of the top Snapchat scrammers. Yep.
That's impressive. Actually. What is a Snapchat?
It's one of those Snapchat things where the kids are talking about.
Oh, the kids. Is it like MySpace?
Yep.
We have 104 followers.
Yep. That's 1,004
followers. Oh, sorry. Yes, I'm reading it.
You fucking stupid.
We've had some replies. Thanks for bringing these into us. Odd Drunk Pod on Instagram commented their favorite is Sherlock Holmes. There you go.
Thanks.
Apart from that, nobody really talks to us. So
listen, if I knew how to work it, Paul, I would do it, all right? I don't know how to work it.
Does Ernie know?
He probably does, yeah.
Give it Ernie. Give okay. Ernie our Instagram account.
Okay.
That's the magic he comes up with.
Jesus Christ.
I'm serious. Give it right. Everybody, from now on, Cormac's son Ernie is going to be in charge of our Instagram account. He can do whatever he wants. Anything he chooses, it's his to enjoy.
I don't want people talking to my 12-year-old son.
Well, I can see it as well, don't worry. Maybe okay. He'll be talking to her. Yeah, right there, kid. It's Ernie, Uncle Paul. Oh, shit. Unsend. So, musicals next week. After that, God knows what. Apart from that, anything to say, mine and friend?
No. Peace and love, and wear sunscreen. Please wear sunscreen. It's very warm out there.
Yeah.
Stop fucking up the planet. Listen to Greta Thingyberg. She knows the score. Don't fuck her. Don't fuck her also.
Don't fuck her. No, don't well, fuck her.
Unless she wants to see it.
So that's what I'm saying.
If she wants you to fuck her.
I mean, don't.
But well, if you
do, obviously, she's a nice lad. Maybe she is. I don't. But don't fuck her.
Only fuck her if she wants to be fucked. Yeah?
By you.
She's 18 now, isn't she? We can say this.
No, I think we're allowed. Yeah. Well, yeah, we can say it in Germany, France, England, and most US states. But I think there's some part of Africa we're not allowed to do that yet. Mongolia.
Fuck Greta Thunberg if Greta Thunberg wants to be fucked. That's what we're leaving you with.
If she wants to be fucked by you, then do
Don't
it.
Don't fuck anyone who doesn't want to be fucked. There you go. That's a great way to end the podcast.
It's like Jerry Springer's final thought. Hey, everyone. Don't.
Yeah. Don't fuck people who don't want to be fucked.
Du bist alles schön. Danke. Auf Wiedersehen.
What?